Hello and welcome everybody to the Logistics Tribe. I am your host, Boris Felgendreher, and this is episode number one of the Logistics Tribe podcast, and the timing couldn't be better for this particular episode because today, Shippeo, the Paris-based supply chain visibility platform that has made such a splash over the last couple of years, has announced a new funding round of $32 million. And today, on this episode number one of the Logistics Tribe podcast, I have Lucien Besse, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Shippeo, as my guest. Pure coincidence. So if you want to look beyond the headlines on this deal, you have certainly come to the right place because today's show is all about supply chain visibility and why Shippeo has been so successful in tackling this persistent issue. So without further ado, here comes Lucien Besse. Hello, Lucien. Welcome to the Logistics Tribe. Thanks for being on the program.
Hello, Boris. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course, of course. Lucien, you are the co-founder and the chief operating officer of Shippeo, very successful supply chain visibility platform based in Paris. You were founded in 2014, and I believe it must have been shortly after you were founded that we first met, and I've monitored and kept a close eye on you guys in the last few years. I'm super impressed by what you've been able to accomplish in these short 6 years of your existence. Before we get started, I mean, I just look at your roster, the companies, and the platform, how it's evolved. It's super, super exciting. We get into all of that. But before we do, maybe take us back to really that year 2013, 2014, when you were, well, a young guy then, and you were still a young guy now. What made you think when you were looking at supply chain logistics, you must have noticed, okay, there's something wrong with supply chain visibility, and you went out to solve it. Like, take me back to your thought process. What did the world look like from your vantage point when you first started thinking about launching a company like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And if I look back in the days in 2014, no one was really talking about supply chain visibility. I think it was basically a concept that was not existing. If you would have told me 5 or 6 years ago you are going to develop the supply chain visibility platform, I would have told you, okay, what's visibility about? So I have to say that the first thing that we've looked for was an exciting market. Before finding an exciting idea or building an exciting product, we were looking for an exciting market. And I was not an expert in supply chain or transportation, neither were my co-founders. And when we first discovered this market, it was in between 2013 and 14, we just saw that first it was a big market with a lot of interesting companies and a lot of innovation to drive. And that was really the starting point. It was not the idea, which is sometimes the case when you build a company. It was really the market itself. So we started with the market, and then we spent probably 18 months on the road talking to people. I remember we talked to a lot of carriers, supply chain departments, associations, etc. We spent a lot of times here and there. And finally, we came out with this idea about visibility, where is my delivery? And I have to say that it was not the first idea that I would have had on this market. Because if you would have told me 5 years ago, you know, there is a visibility problem, people don't know where their delivery is, I would have told you, okay, but in 2014, Boris, people should know where the deliveries are.
Sure.
So that was quite a surprise for me. But it's, as a matter of fact, it did not exist back then. So that's why we started to work on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and somehow I consider you part of a group of entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, that started entering into this field of logistics tech right around that time. And I think before that, you really didn't see that young people that were not from the industry, right, came to the picture, identified a problem, and then started building a company around it. That's somewhat fresh and somewhat new. And it still continues to this day and has matured and grown. For example, I recently talked to David Notaker, the founder of Sender, for example, out of Berlin. Yeah. Same story there. The founding team didn't have no experience in what they were doing now. Super successful a couple of years into the venture. And then recently talked to the chief operating officer of Flaschenpost. the delivery service in Germany that was just sold to Edgar for $1 billion. So there's something going on. And same thing to you there. This guy had no prior experience or prior expertise in logistics supply chain, but yet was able to build a successful company in just a few years. So
yeah,
the times are changing, huh?
Yeah, I'm not saying that the good ideas cannot come from the people being in the industry since 10 years. Or 20 years, but it has to be a mix. I mean,
yeah.
And when people and thoughts and experiences are being mixed, it usually creates a great success. And that's why we thought from the beginning, we have to start from a blank page. That's really important. Mm-hmm. But we also have to, of course, to talk to people that are in the industry since 20 years. So that's this kind of mix of experience and knowledge on the industry that we've tried to create it since the beginning. And we do have today in the company working at Shipeo a lot of people that have experience in supply chain since 15 years, and that's also a great asset for us. So it's not only about starting from a blank page and not knowing anything and
staying there. Yeah,
exactly. It's also mixing experiences. Yeah.
Yes. And also, I mean, for the longest time, it was very hard for young startup founders to get funding for a venture, especially in Europe. Right, I always consider we're several years behind in the way we look at funding new ventures and funding startups. Has that improved now? I mean, 2014, how did you get started? How did you get funded? So the first funding round, what, a couple of million from friends and family, or what was your first round?
We started with our own money, putting most of our savings on the table to hire the first developers and build the first USP, MVP, sorry. That was really the early days. And quite early, I have to say, in the life of Shipeo, we've managed to get access to capital through a venture capitalist because it was, I think the size of the market was quite appealing. Mm. The dynamics that we had since day one was also quite appealing for investors because people understand that it's really the hot topic of the moment. Mm. And it's not just me saying it, it's Gartner, it's everyone saying this. So we didn't have that much difficulty, to be honest, to gain access to capital. But you have to do it right in the right timing, at the right moment, not to grow too fast or too slow. But that's another topic. But yeah, it was not, I would say, the biggest issue. The biggest issue is always to have the right product at the right moment, at the right time. And for that, we've been quite lucky, I guess, because we've really been the witness of the creation of this market. And now you might know that there is a Magic Quadrant coming out next year, being done by Gartner on visibility. There's a lot of things that have been created around this market. Yeah, it's quite exciting. Yeah. So it's nice to see that in 5 years, things change dramatically on this market. And the dynamic is just crazy. Yeah.
Well, take me back to those early days of the early product. So the first, you know, minimal viable product that you took out there to the market. What did that look like? And who were the first customers that said, well, let's give it a try. Let's jump.
Yeah. I mean, when you start a company, you always have to look for innovators. It's the first people who are going to buy your product. It's innovators. I don't know if you know this. This book, which is quite interesting, called "Crossing the Chasm."
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
the innovator's dilemma. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So in crossing the chasm, you always start by the innovators, and that's what you need to do. And back then in 2014 and 15, we've just looked for innovators. And I'm not saying that whatever the product we would have had, they would have by it. I mean, that's not what I'm saying, but it's kind of that you need to find people that have trust in you and who are ready to test anything. And the first product that we actually put on the market was a mobile app for truck drivers, which is completely different from what we are doing today, because of course we still have a great mobile app with a lot of use cases, etc., but it's much bigger than that. What we are building right now, it's a multimodal global visibility platform for large enterprises. So it's really different from a mobile app. But the first ideas that we had on the markets 5 years ago was, okay, carriers and shippers do not manage to share information in real time. Let's build a mobile app. And we thought that in 6 months, all the carriers in Europe would download this mobile app and it would be a great success. Of course, that's not what happened. the mobile app was used. We did a lot of things with it, but it was not enough. It was not enough. Yeah. So we were the first on the market. If you look at all the companies doing that today, we were really the first on the market to say, okay, let's try to integrate telematics of the carrier, and then let's try to integrate TMS of the carriers to be agnostic of the mode of collecting the information and to be able to have a wider scope. So that was the first product. Actually, it was a mobile app for truck drivers, and then it became a global visibility platform. So it really evolved in a few years. Yeah.
Yeah, and who were the first customers that were willing to take a risk, not the risk, but willing to try it and try it out? Who were the first innovators?
Yeah, we had a great traction at that time with Kingfisher Group, one of their subsidiary. Mm-hmm. Castorama in France was one of mm-hmm. the first company who tested the products. Thanks to them, we had a good first traction also with Faurecia in the automotive industry. They tested the product and they are still customer. We are really proud about that. Mm-hmm. Leroy Merlin, big DIY retailer, also mm-hmm. in France, who tested the product and who is still a happy customer, growing also year after year. And by the way, I think that's our biggest achievement is to have kept our customers since day one, which are still using the platform, growing with us, etc. So it's really a really great achievement for us. So yeah, thanks to them.
Yeah, fantastic. And then, of course, you know, as you were growing, as the product matured, you had to hire a team. Talk to me about the team growth. I mean, you've expanded dramatically. Right now, you're what, at 180 people, something like that, almost 200?
Yeah, 160, something like that.
160?
We'll be maybe a bit bigger by the end of the year. Yeah, I mean, if I take a step back on this topic, I truly believe, and I'm a true believer that 99% of the success of a company relies on people. Right. And even more when the company is growing. Hmm. The more you grow, the more you need to rely on talented people. And that's very true. That was very true for us. All the things that were successful at Shibeo, it was related to people, definitely, because we had great people in the company. We very early in the life of Shibeo defined some values, which I still believe are a great way to hire the people that will succeed at Shibeo. So we have four values: ambition, commitment, simplicity, and team spirit. So that's the four values that we have at Shibeo. And I think it really reflects the mentality of the people that are working in the company. They are ambitious for themselves and for the company. They are committed, meaning that they do the extra mile every day. I'm always impressed by the commitment that we have in our teams. They are simple. We don't do politics. We don't complexify stuff, and they work as a team. So that's really four values that are really important for us. And finding the right people is a big challenge, and it's an everyday challenge. Yeah. And I really see the difference of one of our action being successful or not if we have someone that is great or someone that is really, really, really great. I mean, that makes a huge, huge difference. So that's why we only want to hire the best. Yeah.
Yeah, and you will probably eventually reach the point where it's impossible to know everybody personally. You probably haven't reached that point yet. You still know everybody by name when they come by your desk. And
yeah, I think I could tell the name of everyone in the company. That's still a bit difficult, of course. I might have some hesitations, but I still know everyone in the company.
Yeah.
And I think that's strongly related to one of our values, which is simplicity. Because of course we have middle management, we have processes, we have hierarchy in the company, etc. But we try to be very simple in the way we interact between each other, which means that and that's something that I tell to all the newcomers joining the company. We have an onboarding process, and I'm part of the onboarding process. All the newcomers they sit for 1 hour with me, and I just tell them about the values, the vision, what we do, how we work at Shibeo, and I like to take some time to do it with each of the employees joining. And the first thing that I tell them is, you guys will be the future guardians of these values. And so if you start feeling that we are doing something in the wrong way, or we are not ambitious enough, or we are not committed enough, etc., just come and knock at my door and tell it. And you guys are responsible for the future of the success of the company. So that's really, really important for me, to make sure that people feel empowered and responsible for what they do in the company.
Yeah, and this one, 2020, was a very different year. You probably onboarded people and hired people in the pandemic that were never part of the office, never came in. Has that been reality as well for you? That hired people you haven't physically met, or you that haven't been able to come to the office yet?
Yeah, we I think we've onboarded 70 plus people on remote.
Whoa.
Purely on remote. Yeah. So first, big... big thanks and congrats to the HR team.
Yeah, no kidding.
Who did a great job. They are amazing, to be honest. I mean, it's mainly two people who did that, and they are really, really amazing. And yeah, it's quite strange not to know physically people. I remember I had a conversation with one of our marketing team member. Great guy. He did a lot of stuff in the first months. And between the two lockdowns, I took a beer and I saw the guy coming and I said, "Oh, finally, that's you." I mean, we worked so many hours together, and I haven't seen you so far. So I mean, it's really, really strange to kind of rediscover people after you started to work with them. It was a big challenge for us.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then, Lucien, let's just continue down that path of how the company grew. When was the point when you realized? Well, I would guess the first couple of years, you're still on the fence whether you have something successful here, right? Whether this is actually going to work. There's probably a lot of self-doubt. When was the time when you realized, oh my God, I think we hit it now. Now we're hitting stride. Now we found the right product market fit. Now we're onto something. When was that time? Do you remember a particular moment where that happened?
I think it was between 2018 and 19.
Okay. So quite a few years in then. All right.
Interesting. Yeah, I would say 2018. To be honest, mm-hmm. I mean, we've launched the company in 14. In 15, we were just trying to find the ideas, mm-hmm. the product market fit. In 16 and 17, we were piloting with first customers, deploying our first customer, and things really exploded in 2018. Mm-hmm. And we really saw things changing. It hugely relates to the maturity of the market. And I think the market became suddenly more mature in 2018 because we had our first customers, we had our first success stories, we were able to prove the value of the solution, and the market was also much pushy for these kind of solutions. So really, I think 2018 was really a changing and pivotal year for us in the growth of the company.
Yeah, and when you say the market has become more mature, what do you contribute that to? Why do you think the market had suddenly matured in 2018?
I believe that it's a combination of a lot of things. The first thing is that we see more and more companies taking this visibility topic as a very high priority in the company, not only on the supply chain department, but really at the almost at the CEO level. Why? Because people believe, especially for companies selling products, that they want to switch to a kind of product as a service mode, which I call product mm-hmm. as a service, mm-hmm. meaning developing a new service around their product. And I think this was accelerated in the last few years with the rise of everything that you know, the e-commerce, the expectation on the B2C. I'm not going to tell that story again that I tell every day, but if we are doing that, it's because you, Boris, when you order something on an e-commerce platform, you are completely used to have a great service, and companies, they want the same. They just want the same. Yeah. They want the same mm-hmm. for them. They want the same for their customers. And it's not a nice to have anymore. It's a must have. I mean, when you sell a product and when you deliver something that is worth millions of euros to your customers or that is worth less, you want to have a great experience for your customers. And you want to have the same experience as in B2C. And I think this frontier being kind of erased between B2C and B2B, this happened in the last two or three years. Mm-hmm. I think I truly believe that people are consuming which is not the right word, but people are buying their B2B products the same way they are consuming their B2C products. It's exactly the same. So I think that if we have to just remember one thing, that would be the first topic that I would tell, definitely.
Yeah, I think there may be something else going on too. And I want to challenge something that you said very early in the conversation. You said that in 2014, when you started, the concept of supply chain visibility wasn't there, or people weren't talking about it. It's actually, I would like to challenge that, because I know when I started working at GT Nexus in 2009, right, 5 years prior to that, people were already talking about supply chain visibility. It's just that the definition of what that means, what it actually looks like in action, has changed over time. And maybe what happened around 2018, that companies like yours, Shipio and others, were actually pointing the way of what real supply chain visibility looks like on an item level in real time. Yeah, I know exactly where my stuff is. Back in the days, people said, when you ask people, do you have supply chain visibility? I said, yeah, I do have supply chain visibility. All I have to do is I call my 3PL and they will tell me where my container is. Yeah, yes, sure. Yeah. That is one level of one level of visibility, but it's not at all what can be accomplished today. So maybe it's a sort of that feeling, that realization sinking in, that real-time supply chain visibility extends to so much more than what people actually were expecting. Maybe that's another element.
I agree with you. I'm not saying that supply chain visibility as a product was not existing before, definitely. I think that people just suddenly realized that they needed a dedicated product to answer this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that's a big change, because you've talked about GT Nexus, which is a great company with a great product. But GT Nexus, it's global trade management. So it's how to manage trade with your suppliers. That's the first topic that they are trying to answer. And you know better than me that a successful company, they need to answer one challenge and not 10 at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think GT Nexus was answering in a great manner this challenge. And visibility was coming on top of it. It was not the core of what GT Nexus was offering. I think what we are doing at Chico is a bit different, because visibility is the core of what we are offering, which means that all my R&D team is just working on this. They are just trying to solve this topic. And I think it's a topic that is large enough, big enough, strategic enough to have a company dedicated to that. So I think that that's a big change between 2019 and 10 and 2009 and 10 and today, which is you have companies that are really dedicated their resources to answer the challenge.
Yeah, let's double click on what the platform looks today. What's the current setup today if I become a customer of Shippeo? What do I get? What do I accomplish with the platform?
The first thing that you get, of course, which is, I would say, the bread and butter of what we are doing, is connectivity with your carriers.
And by carriers, you mean only truck, or do you mean transmodal?
No, so like we do multimodal today. So we multimodal. Do ocean, container, trucks, FTL, LTL, parcels. Multimodal, of course, so it's really wider than truck, even if trucks is, of course, our home market, I would say. it's where we started with trucks, but now we are expanding to other modes. So it's a multimodal visibility platform. And the first challenge is connectivity. When I try to describe the solution that I'm building for people that are not knowledgeable in supply chain, I just tell them what I'm doing is a multi-plug. It's a multi-plug. You have a lot of carriers. You have one shipper working with 500 or 5,000 carriers. They need to connect them all. They use Shippeo to get access to the data from the carriers. And so that's really the step one of what we are doing. Step two, once you have the data, you need to give some intelligence to this data. Because knowing where the truck is or where the container is nice. You see something moving on a map, but that's not enough. You need to bring some predictive layer on top of this to make sure that customers not only see the truck or the container, but they also know when there is going to be a deviation compared to reality.
Right.
And deviation can mean a delay, or it can mean any unexpected event that could happen into the delivery. So that's what we are doing. As a step two, it's ETA calculation mainly. So we calculate an ETA that is as accurate as possible for the delivery of our customers. And that's a topic that we've been invested on since 2.5 years, almost 3 years. And I have to say that it costs a lot of money, because we hire a data science team that are dedicated to this ETA topic. And we took a crazy bet 3 years ago to say, okay, we are not going to buy a solution from the market to calculate our ETA. We are going to build it internally, which was, I have to say, quite crazy bet, but hopefully it worked.
About those crazy bets.
Yeah.
It's all about the crazy bets. If you're doing safe bets, they're not real interesting bets.
Exactly. So we do that, which is a second layer. So, and the third layer, which is probably related to the vision, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, it's what to do with this data.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you improve your supply chain using this visibility data? And as we have more and more customers being mature using the solution, we really have some interesting and insightful discussion with some of the customers to understand how they can use the data to leverage what they could leverage into their organization and to automate their supply chain. And supply chain automation is really the vision that we have of using visibility tools. And what does supply chain automation means? It's reducing all the areas of friction that you can have into the day of a product moving into your supply chain. So the areas of friction could be dwell times, could be unproductivity, could be manual entries, could be et cetera, et cetera. All these stuff that cost money. We think that we are in a very great position to reduce these areas of friction and automate the supply chain of our customers thanks to visibility.
And the system itself, does it completely integrate with existing systems like TMSs or an ERP, or is
sure,
it a separate system?
That's okay. That's a starting point of any project. We do integrate with third-party systems, being either TMS, ERP, order management system, WMS. So the data can come from everywhere, basically from our customers. And we also have great partnership with some of these players. For example, we've just recently announced that we're joining the LBN program of SAP, which is a quite dynamic initiative that they are running right now at SAP to build this logistic business network initiative. We've been working with them since a long time to integrate this. It's also a combination of sharing the data that we have in Shipeo, in other systems, to make sure that customers can really realize the value of these kind of solutions.
Yeah. How many customers are currently on the platform?
About 80-ish, almost 80 customers. Yeah, as of today.
Yeah. And then that translates into how many carriers? So they bring all their carriers with them. And that's a question I have. Once a particular carrier is integrated for one customer, does that mean that the next customer that comes on does not have to integrate with that any longer? Or
That's what we call the network effect.
That's what I was getting at.
When customers are buying Shipeo, they are also buying the network that comes with it.
Excellent. Yeah.
And so we are not only selling software, we are also selling the network or leveraging the network that we have for our customers. So yes, that's correct. The 140,000 carriers that we have today
connected
to the platform, which is quite a lot, can be activated on demand for the customers
That's excellent. So if I come on and I use Hapag-Lloyd, it's already integrated, so that's not an integration I have to do.
Exactly.
It's already there. I just have to turn on the hose of the fire hose of information, so to speak, for them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it, because the more customers you have, the largest network you have, etc. So it's getting easier and easier day after day. So that's really the beauty of it. Yeah.
And in terms of the data, does each customer benefit if another customer comes on? Not just in terms of the integrations that already exist, but also in terms of the data that's on the platform. In other words, do I, with my shipments and the sort of predictive ETAs and maybe some of the AI you're using in the process, do my predictions benefit from the predictions that are being made for other customers?
Yeah. So what we do is indeed machine learning, and machine learning means having a system that is self-learning. So it means that based on the historical data that we have, the algorithm will recognize some patterns and will say, hey, I know this pattern. I've seen this pattern at another customer. I'm going to apply the results of the algorithm to this use case.
Yeah.
And of course, the use case could be for the same customer, but we have a lot of customers that share the same patterns or the same use case. I'm an industrial customer doing A to B between this country and this country and uses this type of carrier. That's a pattern. And we can reuse this to improve the ETA algorithm. So, of course, everything is anonymized. We are not sharing any data between customers.
But we
have a self-learning algorithm that also benefits from the 10 million shipments that we have on the platform. We track 10 million shipments per year today.
Yeah, awesome. What sort of information is being used to predict these ETAs? Is it also, let's say, traffic information, of course, from some of the telematic systems, of course, but also weather just weather patterns? And
so we made the calculation some weeks ago with our data science team, and we are using more than 200 parameters in the algorithm. And it's a combination of external and internal parameters.
Mm-hmm.
So internal, it's related to what we've just discussed, the patterns that we see on the transport order. So it could be the type of flow, type of carrier, type of transport mode, etc. So you have a lot of things like that. And external would be things that we collect not from our customers, but from externally. So weather is part of it. Definitely, mm-hmm. we do rely on external data to integrate the weather into algorithm. We do rely on traffic, of course, real-time traffic for different modes of transportation. That's also is included into the platform. So it's, yeah, it's a combination of both.
Interesting. And what industries is this most appealing to? Who's like your core industry you're going at? It's probably a variety of different industries, but who are the main industries that are benefiting the most currently?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not really a limitation, which is also, again, the beauty of this market, because I don't think about a company that would say, hey, I don't want to know where my deliveries are. I've never heard that. So whatever the industry, I think it's applicable. If I look at what's working really well today, I would say retail. Retail is a very, very strong market for us, whether it's inbound or outbound deliveries to shops and stores. We have a lot of customers in retail. The second one would be...
And by retail, you also mean e-commerce or only stationary retail?
I would mainly say stationary e-commerce. So people delivering stores and shops. Yeah. But we do also have, and that's a good point, we do also have some e-commerce players using our solution, because if at some point you don't know where your delivery is, you won't be able to tell to your customers that the product is available online. And sometimes this has you have some supply chain in e-commerce that are almost just in time because you don't want to have a lot of stocks. So if you are able to tell to the customer your container is here or there, or the truck is here or there, this could impact the availability of the product online. So we also have some customers like this who are using our solution to that purpose. So that's at retail. Manufacturing, of course, and in manufacturing, we have a very, very strong traction in automotive. I think I don't have to really explain the value of having visibility for automotive. All the challenge of a production line in the automotive, if you're not on time, or if your supplier is not on time, you are going to have big problems, which are going to imply a lot of financial loss for the company. So that's also a very strong vertical for us. We do have a lot of customers in this industry. Building materials, it's also an interesting one. We have a lot of traction in this. People delivering construction sites. You know that it's almost, I mean, usually I'm almost describing this as a B2C use case, because the even if it's a B2B customer that you are delivering, the guy who is waiting for the truck on the construction site, he has the same expectation that a B2C customer. He wants to receive an SMS notification saying, hey, the truck is late or on time or it's coming, etc. So this is a very strong vertical. And the last one, so I'm just naming a few, but the last one that I'm thinking about is, of course, 3PL and 4PL. Logistics provider in general. I see a big change in the mentality of these companies and some of them being really innovative and saying, I want to proactively offer a visibility solution to my customer. So I'm going to buy Shipio to then develop a new service in my 4PL or 3PL offering, a new service for my customers. So that's also a strong market for us.
And in terms of regions, what so you started with a couple of customers in France, and then I know you expanded to Germany. What does it currently look like? Where are you currently most active? In Europe, I assume it's only Europe right now, or
not only Europe, because if you look at where we've deployed the solution in the last 12 months, it's 72 countries. So it's quite
72 countries,
quite
okay.
large. Mm-hmm. For example, we do have 21 countries in Africa being covered by the solution.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We do tracking in Russia. We have some customers also using the solution in Asia. We have 3 countries in Asia.
Fantastic.
We have
okay.
Some customers being active in North America. But most of them are European-based customers, European-based companies having global footprint. So we are really good at working with companies having a global footprint. But most of the decision centers, of course, are based in Europe. If I look at the most active market in Europe, the first one that I would name would be Germany, I think. Not telling that for you, Boris, but I mean, it's a very, very dynamic market. We do have a great team of people working in our Düsseldorf office. And if I look at the last 2 quarters, the biggest traction that we had was in Germany by far.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, and as you know, it's a big industrial market with a lot of companies that could use our solution. So it's an interesting market for us.
Yeah, I saw the numbers that you reported. I think in the first half of 2020, you had like a 200% year-over-year growth, revenue growth, or subscription revenue.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what we observed in the first half, so in the last 12 months, 200% growth. And part of it, a huge part of it was coming from Germany, definitely, which is a very dynamic market again. So yeah, it's again, I think it's only, and which what's quite exciting is that it's only the starting. starting years of this market. We really have strong expectation for the next years.
Yeah, yeah. Has COVID sped up or slowed down the progress? What do you think?
One thing that is true is that it has not slowed down the progress. All the projects that we've engaged right before COVID, they continued. Some of them even accelerated. We had some sales cycles that were also accelerated thanks to COVID. So of course, you have some companies that suffered from it. I'm not going to lie on this, but most of them they are willing to invest in these kind of solutions. You've heard everything around this concept of agility, resilience, etc., which can sometimes be buzzwords, but when it comes to visibility, it's really, really important, and it's a huge part of it. I think unfortunately, COVID will also be some sort of catalyst in the next few months to use these kind of solutions.
Yeah, next few months and next years is a good transition to the next topic. I would like to talk to you about the future. What does the Shippeo platform look like in 5 years from now? What does the company look like? What does the platform look like? How would it evolve over time?
Yeah, I mean, I can come back to the vision. I mean, everything starts with the product, definitely. So maybe I can start with that. I think in a few years, Shippeo will be a supply chain automation platform with visibility being the foundation of it, of course. But we've always believed with our customers, with our partners, with my co-founders, that visibility was the starting point of something bigger. Mm-hmm. And this something bigger is, again, what we call supply chain automation. Repeating myself, but it's reducing all the frictions that you can have into the supply chain of a customer. And visibility can help on this. If you want to reduce the manual entries, if you want to reduce the dwell time of your product moving into the supply chain, if you want to reduce your stocks, if you want to reduce to optimize your transportation plan, everything is related to visibility. Why? Because visibility is about data. And by using this data, you'll be able to improve your organization and your supply chain processes. So what we want to do is use our visibility solution to feed external systems that are used by our customers. Could be systems in transportation, could be system in warehouses, it could be system in planification, it could be system in optimization. All these systems, they will need the visibility information in the future. So I think that we'll be very well positioned to run this supply chain automation platform in partners with other solutions. We don't believe that we can do everything. That's not true. I mean, you always have a lot of companies using a lot of different solutions, but we think that we can be a kind of starting point of connecting these systems for our customers.
Yeah. And in 2025, will you still be an independent company, or will you have been acquired, or will you have acquired several other companies? I saw you you acquired the first acquisition, right? Ophone, I saw. Was it a competitor, by the way?
We just bought a company this year during COVID, by the way. It's a company based in France, 20 people, based in Lyon. So we've opened a new office also in Lyon. It was a great, it's a great company with great and talented people. So it was a small Shippeo, I would say, in France. So they were doing visibility and some other things. It was a great opportunity for us to help them grow with the resources that we have at Shippeo. Also make sure that their customer grow with us. They have a really, really talented team of individuals that have a very great knowledge in transportation. I've told you that we like to mix. If you remember, we like to mix between people having this knowledge and not, so that they are really knowledgeable about supply chain. So it's also a great asset for us.
Awesome.
And yeah, in 5 years, in 2025, I want to see the company growing. I just want to reach the objective, which is to continue being a leader on this market. And whatever the form is, it will be the right one as long as the company keeps growing. So I don't have any answer to that question specifically because I don't know it. But what I'm sure is that Shippeo will still exist in 5 years and will continue to grow, of course.
Well, it looks like you're on the right track there. Lucien, thank you very much for the conversation today. It was great. Really, really nice talking to you again. I hope our audience will appreciate a sort of long form deep dive into everything Shippeo. It's an exciting story, and I can't wait to see how the future unfolds for you guys.
Great. Thanks so much for having me today, Boris, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was episode number one of the Logistics Tribe. I hope you enjoyed today's show, and I'm very much looking forward to your feedback. I will leave a link to my LinkedIn profile in the show notes so you can contact me there. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. I'm your host, Boris Felgendreher, and I hope to see you next time.